The drought had lasted now for 10 million years, and the reign of the terrible lizards had long since ended. Here on the equator, in the continent which one day would be known as Africa, the battle for existence had reached a new climax of ferocity, and the victor was not yet in sight. In this barren and desiccated land, only the small, or the swift, or the fierce could flourish, or even hope to survive. The man-apes of the Veldt were none of these things, and they were not flourishing. Indeed, they were already far down the road to racial extinction. About 50 of them occupied a group of caves overlooking a small parched valley, which was divided by a sluggish stream fed from snows in the mountains 200 miles to the north. In bad times, the stream vanished completely, and the tribe lived in the shadow of thirst. The tribe was always hungry, and now it was starving. When the first faint glow of dawn crept into the cave, Moonwatcher saw that his father had died in the night. He did not know that the old one was his father, for such a relationship was utterly beyond his understanding. But as he looked at the emaciated body, he felt a dim disquiet that was the ancestor of sadness. Among his kind, Moonwatcher was almost a giant. He was nearly 5 feet high, and though badly undernourished, weighed over 100 pounds. His hairy, muscular body was halfway between ape and man, but his head was already much nearer to man than ape. The forehead was low, and there were ridges over the eye sockets, yet he unmistakably held in his genes the promise of humanity. As he looked out upon the hostile world of the Pleistocene, there was already something in his gaze beyond the capacity of any ape. In those dark, deep-set eyes was a dawning awareness, the first intimations of an intelligence that could not possibly fulfill itself for ages yet, and might soon be extinguished forever. There was no sign of danger, so Moonwatcher began to scramble down the almost vertical slope outside the cave. As if they had been waiting for his signal, the rest of the tribe emerged from their own homes further down the rock face and began to hasten towards the muddy waters of the stream for their morning drink. Moonwatcher looked across the valley to see if the others were in sight, but there was no trace of them. Perhaps they had not yet left their caves, or were already foraging further along the hillside. Since they were nowhere to be seen, Moonwatcher forgot them. He was incapable of worrying about more than one thing at a time. First, he must get rid of the body of the old one. But this was a problem that demanded little thought. There had been many deaths this season, one of them in his own cave. He had only to put the corpse where he had left the new baby at the last quarter of the moon, and the hyenas would do the rest. When he reached the stream, the others were there. They were there every day, but that did not make it any the less annoying. There were about 30 of them, and they could not have been distinguished from the members of Moonwatcher's own tribe. As they saw him coming, they began to dance, shake their arms, and shriek on their side of the stream, and his own people replied in kind. And that was all that happened. Though the man-apes often fought and wrestled among each other, their disputes very seldom resulted in serious injuries. They had little surplus energy for such unproductive behavior. Snarling and threatening was a much more efficient way of asserting their points of view. The confrontation lasted about 5 minutes. Then the display died out as quickly as it had begun, and everyone drank his fill of the muddy water. Moonwatcher and his tribe moved off along its side of the river. The nearest worthwhile grazing was now more than a mile from the caves, and they had to share it with a herd of large antelope-like beasts who barely tolerated their presence. They could not be driven away, for they were armed with ferocious daggers on their foreheads. So Moonwatcher and his companions chewed berries and fruit and leaves and fought off the pangs of hunger, while all around them, competing for the same fodder, was a source of more food than they could ever hope to eat. Yet the meat roaming over the savannah was not only beyond their reach, it was beyond their imagination. In the midst of plenty, they were slowly starving to death. Over the valley a full moon was rising, and a chill wind was blowing down from the distant mountains. It would be very cold tonight. But cold like hunger was not a matter for any real concern. It was merely part of the background of life. Moonwatcher barely stirred when the shrieks and screams echoed up the slope from one of the lower caves, and he did not need to hear the occasional growl of the leopard to know exactly what was happening. Down there in the darkness, old Whitehair and his family were fighting and dying, and the thought that he might help in some way never crossed Moonwatcher's mind. The harsh logic of survival ruled out such fancies, and not a voice was raised in protest from the listening hillside. Every cave was silent, lest it also attract disaster. The tumult died away. Then the leopard got a good hold on its kill, carrying its victim effortlessly in its jaws. Moonwatcher crawled out of the cave, clambered onto a large boulder beside the entrance, and squatted there to survey the valley. Of all the creatures who had yet walked on Earth, the man-apes were the first to look steadfastly at the moon. And though he could not remember it, when he was very young, Moonwatcher would sometimes reach out and try to touch that ghostly face rising above the hills. Once or twice he dozed off, but he slept with a hair-trigger alertness, and the slightest sound would have disturbed him. At the great age of 25, he was still in full possession of all his faculties. If his luck continued, and he avoided accidents, disease, predators, and starvation, he might survive for as much as another 10 years. The night wore on, cold and clear, without further alarms, and the moon rose slowly amid equatorial constellations that no human eye would ever see. And twice there passed, slowly across the sky, rising up the zenith and descending into the east, a dazzling point of light, more brilliant than any star. Late that night, Moonwatcher suddenly awoke. Fear crept slowly into his soul. Never in his life had he heard a sound like this. It seemed that some enormous beast was moving through the night, making no attempt at concealment and ignoring obstacles. And then there came a sound which Moonwatcher could not possibly have identified, for it had never been heard before in the history of the world. It was the clank of metal upon stone. Moonwatcher came face to face with a new rock when he led the tribe down to the river in the first light of morning. It was a rectangular slab, 3 times his height, but narrow enough to span with his arms, and it was made of some completely transparent material. Indeed, it was not easy to see, except when the rising sun glinted on its edges. As Moonwatcher had never encountered ice or even crystal-clear water, there were no natural objects to which he could compare this apparition. It was certainly attractive, and though he was wisely cautious of most new things, he did not hesitate for long before sidling up to it. As nothing happened, he put out his hand and felt a cold, hard surface. After several minutes of intense thought, he arrived at a brilliant explanation. It was a rock, of course, and it must have grown during the night. There were many plants that did this, white, pulpy things shaped like pebbles that seemed to shoot up during the hours of darkness. A few licks and nibbles quickly disillusioned him that it might be edible. There was no nourishment here. So, like a sensible man-ape, he continued on his way to the river and forgot all about it. The foraging today was very bad, and the tribe had to travel several miles from the caves to find food at all. On the homeward trek, looking round anxiously for early hunters, they drank hastily at the stream and started to climb up to their caves. They were still 100 yards from the new rock when the sound began. It stopped them dead, so that they stood paralyzed on the trail, with their jaws hanging slackly. A simple, maddening, repetitious vibration, it pulsed out from the crystal and hypnotized all who came within its spell. And as the shadows lengthened and the light drained from the sky, the monolith lost its transparency and became suffused with a pale, milky luminescence. Tantalizing, ill-defined phantoms moved across its surface and in its depths. They coalesced into bars of light and shadow, then formed intermeshing spoked patterns that began slowly to rotate. Now, utterly hypnotized, the man-apes could only stare into this astonishing display of pyrotechnics. They could never guess that their minds were being probed, their bodies mapped, their reactions studied, their potentials evaluated. At first the whole tribe remained half-crouching in a motionless tableau, as if frozen into stone. Then the man-ape nearest the slab suddenly came to life, as if it were a puppet controlled by invisible strings. The head turned this way and that. The mouth silently opened and closed. The hands clenched and unclenched. Then he bent down, snapped off a long stalk of grass, and attempted to tie it into a knot with clumsy fingers. Despite all his efforts, he succeeded only in breaking the stalk in pieces. As the fragments fell to the ground, the controlling influence left him, and he froze once more into immobility. Another man-ape came to life and went through the same routine. This was a younger, more adaptable specimen. It succeeded where the older one had failed. On the planet Earth, the first crude knot had been tied. When Moonwatch's turn came, he felt very little fear. Without knowing why, he bent down and picked up a small stone. When he straightened up, he saw that there was a new image in the crystal slab. The grids and the moving, dancing patterns had gone. Instead, there was a series of concentric circles surrounding a small black disk. Obeying the silent orders in his brain, he pitched the stone with a clumsy overarm throw. It missed the target by several feet. "Try again," said the command. At the fourth attempt, he was only inches from the central bullseye. A feeling of indescribable pleasure, almost sexual in its intensity, flooded his mind. Then the control relaxed. He felt no impulse to do anything except to stand and wait. One by one, every member of the tribe was briefly possessed. Some succeeded, but most failed at the tasks they had been set, and all were appropriately rewarded by spasms of pleasure or of pain. Now there was only a uniform, featureless glow in the great slab, so that it stood like a block of light superimposed on the surrounding darkness. As if waking from a sleep, the man-apes shook their heads and presently began to move along the trail to their place of shelter. They did not look back, or wonder at the strange light that was guiding them to their homes, and to a future unknown as yet, even to the stars. The man-apes had no recollections of what they had seen after the monolith had ceased to cast its hypnotic spell. The next day, as they went out to forage, they passed it with scarcely a second thought. They could not eat it, and it could not eat them. Therefore, it was not important. That night, the slab was still waiting, again surrounded by its pulsating aura of light and sound. Some of the man-apes ignored it completely, but the crystal monolith was patient. Neither it nor its replicas, scattered across half the globe, expected to succeed with all the scores of groups involved in the experiment. 100 failures would not matter, when a single success could change the destiny of the world. So night after night, Moonwatcher stared at the crystal monolith with unblinking eyes, while his brain lay open to its still uncertain manipulations. Often he felt nausea, but always he felt hunger, and from time to time his hands clenched unconsciously in the patterns that would determine his new way of life.